It's our pleasure to welcome Mark Olivier Fowler. We are so delighted to have him as the new executive director of the Broad Art Museum. Extraordinary background, primarily in Europe, but also in New York, and an opportunity to really move the Broad Art Museum to the next level. And the Hollis family is one of the donors to the Broad Art Museum and its importance for the community. You're new to the community, arriving with your spouse a couple months ago.
Yeah, I arrived, I think, 5 weeks ago. Yeah. So it's pretty new. I continue to discover the area, the community, the state. And it's a fantastic experience, I have to say.
When you came in and you took this position and you saw the facility and you saw the building, you see what's around it, what were your first impressions?
Well, my first impression was it's not an easy building. Contemporary art is not easily accessible. How can we perform something, present exhibition, imagine a program that would be enticing to people. And given the challenge of the radicality of the building and the radicality of what we want to present. So this is a challenge I like. Yeah. I'm coming from a town where there was absolutely no contemporary art. And with some friends, we decided to show contemporary art in that town. And for me, here, of course, it's different. It's a fantastic tool. There is a fantastic community with the Michigan State University. There is amazing knowledge all around. An artist decades started to collaborate with scientists, with writers, with sportsmen, mm-hmm. in order to expand the language of art. And I think here it's a fantastic experience to continue this adventure, implement it in new domains. And basically, my main challenge, I think, is taking this opportunity of having a building which is not inside the campus. The building is really in between the campus and the community. And it's just like a gateway, like a bridge. So it's trying to continue this great challenge and having this great opportunity to continue bridging between communities and university.
When the Broad opened, mm-hmm. It was Michael did a great job of doing the opening exhibit. We were closely tied to the Broad Foundation and its collection. The Kresge was included. And then with Michael's illness shortly after the opening, mm-hmm. Some of the energy that happened at the opening was hard to sustain. Right. And so we didn't have quite the connections and the enthusiasm that we needed, though Michael did an extraordinary job. So this is not to diminish anything he did. It's just that health intervened. And now we have, we had a period without a director. Mm-hmm. And Graham Beal from DIA helped us enormously this year to try to get a bit back on track. And now we're sort of almost starting afresh with Mark Olivier as the director with new ideas, with a building that has proven to be as important architecturally as it was when the building opened, but still has not seen its full potential in displaying art.
Yeah, I mean, there are several challenges, but just to... when you spoke about Michael, I think I've heard he was here on this radio in 2012, yeah. and mm-hmm. he was already talking about bridging the museum with the community, especially with the collection and artists. And so for me, I'm really in a position where I have to and I want to bring forward what Michael's wanted to do. Really like to expand his vision. Of course, I have my vision, but I really feel we are on the same spirit, mm-hmm. I would say. So it's a very good feeling of having this excellent base, this excellent foundation I can build on, and without losing Michael's vision, I think it's interesting to come with new projects and build on it. And I came last week, I presented to the whole staff the 16 new projects. So I think we have enough on our plate for the next years.
Why don't you give people a sense of what the scope of the new projects might be and what they could look forward to in terms of coming to the Broad?
So one of the projects, of course, is we are a museum, a university museum. We have a fantastic collection, more than 7,000 items. And, of course, the museum is a contemporary art museum with, like, temporary exhibition, but we need to show somehow the collection. So we are looking now to cross the street, basically, trying to find new spaces where we could start showing the collection in conjunction with a temporary exhibition and young artists, because I think a collection has to be alive, and bringing back part of the collection in the building. So having like this a kind of like a connection, like electricity, you know, electricity. You have electricity only if you have connection between two points. Without this continuous movement, you have no energy. And I really feel the museum like this. If it's just a destination museum, it's fine, but it doesn't do good to the community. It has to go on and on, back and forth between two or more points. So that's how I see a little bit like in terms of energetic opportunities. So the collection is one way. The other, most of the project is trying to think about the museum not as a hardware anymore, but as a software. I mean, normally a museum, you have a great platform and you build on this hardware, and everything you build is identified with the building. It's like, you know, like 20 years ago when you have like a software that could graph only on one type of platform. Nowadays, of course, it's over. A good software can graph on different type of platform, on different type of like computer, apps, phone, tablets. And so I think the future of the museum is a museum that, of course, has a hardware, but develops softwares that could graph on different type of hardware, meaning we could be as a museum in a building next opposite of the street. We could build a mobile museum with artists, with car designers, and having this fantastic visually awesome truck touring around the state, or in even like around the nation. And that's another, that's the mobile museum. We have to think people are coming to enjoy, of course, the exhibition, but sometimes just to get a coffee. How can just this experience of coming to have a coffee can be transformed into an artistic experience? Because this is a way of, or maybe, you know, you're tired and you work the whole day and you don't want to, you know, like be confronted to contemporary. Just come and have a coffee. And then little by little, because just having a coffee, it's already an artistic experience. Then they would go inside the exhibition, which is entrance free, I have to say, and then experience more radical art.
I think you find in many cases art and athletics are not so dissimilar. There are many parallels that I try to draw both from the Wharton Center, the Art Museum, and looking at what I do as an athletic director. Experiences with the Art Museum, one is the focal point on destination. The Art Museum is a destination for those that have extremely high interest in that vein of connectivity. like athletics. There are passionate fans that love college football. But we could not thrive on just that passionate fan. We need individuals to come to the game that are there for other reasons, and we have to provide opportunities for them to have that. The museum has done a great job of that, and I think part of that is the fact that not only is it at a museum in a community, but it's a museum on an educational institution. And I've had experiences there where one I can recall is the fruit tree grafting that they did. And I walked in and I was like, what am I looking at? And then the educational component got dropped in front of me, and how things work and the value that this art had on a bigger basis really changed my perception on some of the aspects of the facility, because it was people with art, not just looking. It was describing and making it come to life. And I think that's one of the assets that you have on campus, is there's many, many other groups on campus that get intertwined into everything that we do. You're going to benefit from that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of my main challenge is because I've worked with artists for the past 20 years, always trying to confront with new languages and new type of practices, having an artist collaborating with a lab in Japan, or having another artist with an institution in Moscow or the Math Institute in Paris. But here, everything is on the same site. It's fantastic. And you have the best knowledge, the best scientist. So it's like a dream. And then many artists already are writing to me, and they have like fantastic project with the entomology department on sinking fireflies and crickets and bioluminescence bacteria and algorithm music.
Right.
So you know, you have this type of project, and it can be done only here, I think.
Right.
We were in a meeting yesterday about movement on campus, and you were brave enough to walk over, being only here for a short period of time, and so we commend you for part of our movement project. But one of our colleagues was talking about a piece of art he had seen in San Francisco, where as you walk by it, the lights change, and so how do we think about, and we were just brainstorming about how art could be a part of the movement encouragement for our campus, because there are these ways that you can integrate art into campus that cities are doing, both European cities as well as places like San Francisco, and how do we bring those ideas to campus and not simply think about the Broad exhibition space as the space defined by the corner.
Mm-hmm. I think this is really important, having exhibitions elsewhere in the public space. When you enter a museum, you know you're gonna encounter art. So there's no suspense, there's no tension. You know it's art. But when you are in the public area, public space, when you see something, you have to take position. You have to decide if it's art or not. And I really like this type of art when it can fall on either side. And you have to decide whether or not it's art or something else. We can decide that something which is not meant to be art is art. And this is the beauty of it, because it can just enchant your day. And there are many projects on the public space. One is the billboard project, when we're going to work with artists on many billboards in the city. But one of the very important projects is called the birdhouses project. And we'd like to ask the 50 best architects in the world, because we have one of the best here, Zaha Hadid. And I worked with many architects like Chipperfield, like other famous architect, and we are going to ask them to design the birdhouse. And why a birdhouse? Because here, of course, Michigan is a very important hub for migrational birds. So we need this type of birdhouses. So imagine on the campus we can have we can host and we can have these fantastic architect project, the best 50 architects in the world in the campus with special design from them.
Part of that, I think, goes to your philosophy of how we encourage individuals who don't see them as see themselves as the natural patron, to use Marx, of the arts. I'm an athletic person. I'm an outdoor person. Mm-hmm. Whatever words those are, to recognize that there's art and form in all that we do and encounter, and you just have to see it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think is important that was part of your philosophy is how do we encourage people to come back when it's okay not to like something? You know, your philosophy that it's okay not to like something, and you're not less educated or less intellectual because you just don't like it. And the power is coming back and trying to find, sort of thinking about why you don't like it. You're not buying it, so it doesn't matter. And to come back and experience something else. And that's okay.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I think it's okay. Not, I mean, personally, and I think any curator would agree, I mean, we go and see hundreds of exhibitions every month, and maybe 90% not our taste. It doesn't say that we don't go anymore. It's like a movie, you know, like you go to a movie, you don't like a movie. You don't say that you don't go anymore.
Right.
You know, there's another one which will be great. And right. So, but there is sometimes the problem with art, I think, that's my conviction, is the language we use. And that's the main problem. We are most of the time we are educated with art in a way that we still use our old logic, which is the logic we've heard. It's black or white. It's either that or that. But the artists never use this type of logic. For them, it's the additional logic. It's this and this and this. It's like in advanced science, everyone is using. It's like there is no wrong solution. There's only like more or less useful solutions. And I think in art, we are told, oh, the artist wanted to tell this, or the interpretation of this painting is that. Yeah, it's that and another one and yours personally and any other interpretation. And once you acquire this type of logic and you could see one object with one interpretation, and you come back and you see it with another interpretation, and you agree with that, and you think, "Ah, the more interpretation an object can bear, the more dense, the more efficient, the more, for me, valuable it becomes." And I think this is the beauty of art, and that's why I think art is a kind of a toolbox for our everyday life to acquire this power of additional logic. You know what you want. You don't lose your identity, but you could see things in different ways without being wrong or true. And I think this is a great lesson of art.
I think one of the values of contemporary art, because it's hard to define contemporary art when it begins and when it ends. There's a technical definition, but there are current artists who paint in very impressionistic classical forms that you would see in a museum in Paris of an artist who did that in 1800. And they mimic that and they create their own space. And then there are artists who have these really weird things of colors and symbols and spaces that challenge your sense of perspective of your of perception, as well as just this looks like I could a third year could do it, or I could do this, which I couldn't. But it sort of has that sense, which is one of the reasons that people sort of disdain geometrical contemporary art. But I think the Broad with your leadership has the capacity to put all of this together. In an interesting way.
I think it's a question of what language you use and what kind of story you tell. And I think this is very important to build a program where the visitor would come and see an exhibition and say, okay, I understand or not. But then it's enticing enough that he would come to the second exhibition. And then he would think, oh, I see now the first exhibition in a different way, and I can imagine what could come next. So it's really trying to put the visitor in a process, in a story that is continuing with him. It's not that he's coming to see an exhibition. It's like a fixed point in time and space, and he will see this exhibition, and after that, it's over. We need the visitor to come, be part of the museum, because it's a process, and it's a story. It's one chapter, but there's a next one a few months later. So if you feel this, like you're told a story, and at the end of the chapter, you want to know the next chapter. So this is kind of, again, energy, suspense, tension to be created.
Is there a season or a pace to the building on when is the best time to visit?
No, there is no specific season.
So the building really lives as art, as things are cycling through.
We try to have exhibition all the time. So a visitor, when he comes, the opening hours, of course, could see something. There's always a turnaround and something
always
is opened.
Something
always something happened. And if we open the collection next opposite side of the street, there will be expanding. And if we are in the public space, and if we one of the project is to build a third floor, which will be a virtual floor, 1 terabyte of space for the artist, so that will be 24-hour open. We will try to work on the opening hours, so the museum could be open after 5, after people go out of their of school or job. So we try to be open the software, but also the hardware, but also as a software.
I must also say that for me, since art is still something that I'm struggling to learn, because it was not a part of my upbringing in rural Indiana. And I learned art in the much more traditional form of here's the right answer and go to these 3 museums and see this kind of thing. But I enjoy going over there for a bit in certain mornings and sort of having a coffee. That area, that's part of the museum, is a great space. It's the place where we've done more of the whimsical exhibitions with the balls hanging down and some other kinds of things that are just fun to be with, and are lifting your spirit without necessarily having to challenge your mind as much as parts of the other museum. And then I just drop into a part that's open.
Every time we've been, I've always left with an interesting story.
Yeah.
And that's, even as you look at things, you might go, eh, or you might go, wow. But I've always left with an interesting story, and that's been the takeaway for our family, walking out of there every time we go.
And that's the great city's advantage of museums, because nobody sees those, unless you're on a power trip to check off the box on touring, nobody sees everything in a museum, even the most elaborate. So you go back and you sample for your definition of a story, and that's part of the culture change for this community that the Broad was to catalyze. And we, again, got a little bit trapped in having exhibits there too long. So they stayed too long, and therefore there wasn't the encouragement to come back more often or this connection to the community. And now with Marc Olivier's leadership and his enthusiasm and his openness to various forms of art, it's going to be a really exciting time for Michigan State.
Excited.
No, it's super exciting.
Welcome to campus. Yeah.
Thank you.
And again, thank you for being very brave and walking over. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you.